Matt, what is the difference between, as you were quoted as saying, you learned when you were a young music student, playing music and playing fast?
Well, I was fascinated at a younger age by people that seemed to sing on the instrument more than technically masterful people. I mean, I'm always, you know, everybody's always, you know, you're always excited about to see somebody who can physically do things. I mean, on any instrument, whether it's a saxophone or the piano or the guitar, people that can have a lot of facility. But the thing is, well, are they using that to just to do it, or are they using it to translate it to convey a message of some sort of music? So I've been always more inclined to hear, as a matter of fact, I'm always fascinated with people, how much people do with very little, you know. So to me, technique or mechanics of playing the instrument is so personal. Some people have a lot of technique and can say a lot. Some people hardly have any technique and can really say a lot. It's all in the eye. And it doesn't make anybody a better or less musician if they don't have that, to me. It's still how you feel. It's very much like Mr. Heath said today about, wow, you don't need a Geiger counter to figure out the music. Wow, you feel it. So I'm very much, you know, there's a great story that Lester Young, a great saxophone player, went up to Lester Young on a bus, and was tour bus, and was playing all this stuff and fast and playing all this stuff. And Lester Young looked at him and said, yeah, but can you sing me a song? And I always think about that from the drums. Wow, can you just do any of that, or is it really music? So I was always much more inclined to be leaning towards, wow, how musical and how song-like I can have the instrument be.
So you would describe percussion as, quote, singing, if I understand correctly?
Singing, yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's all melodic to me. Every rhythms are melody, everything. Everything is melodies. You know, ride cymbal, I don't call it the ride cymbal beat, I call it the ride cymbal melody. I mean, it's the sound that comes from the cymbal. It's more than just a stagnant, one-dimensional beat. It's like just the harmonics and the feel, the sound coming at you, to me, is very melodic. The drums are very melodic, no doubt. All great drummers play very melodic.
So when you're playing drums, how do you hear melody in all the rhythms that you play?
You know, and I don't separate it. To me, it's one action. To me, it's one thing. You know, to me, melody, everything, sound is all that. Sound is melody, harmony, and rhythm all together. You know, so I'm not, when I'm playing, I don't ever really think, oh, this is just a rhythm or this is a melody. I think it's all together. I mean, they go hand in hand. So separate them is, you know, I don't really even separate them in my thought at all.
And I've heard that you say that the ride cymbal carries all the melody.
Yeah. I think a lot of the music in jazz music, I think the ride cymbal of the jazz drummer is really a signature sound of them. Like, for example, when you hear Mr. Heath today, Tootie Heath, he's got a very different ride cymbal beat. And it's beautiful. And I love the way it feels. And it's been a big influence on me. It's a little straighter sounding. So some people more triplet, rounder, like bang, boom, ga-dang, dang, go-dang. And Tootie's is more like dang, 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 dang. So his melody of his ride cymbal beat is different. But to me, like that's where a lot of the music is fueled, is from the sound of the ride. So when you listen to the great records we're talking about Tony Williams. I mean, Miles' band, a lot of that stuff came from Tony's ride cymbal. All the music emerged to me from the ride cymbal. Terrell Stafford, the trumpet player in Arts and Crafts, he says that everything comes from the ride cymbal. So when he always asks, make sure that everybody in a group, when we're working with groups, the big band or whatever, can hear the ride cymbal, the drummer's ride cymbal, because really that's where a lot of it is emerging from. It's a horizontal time feel too, that and the walking bass keeps the time moving forward. So we have vertical time, we have horizontal time. And the ride cymbal to me is, along with the bass, is horizontal. It keeps the music moving forward. So swing to me moves. There's a lot of motion in music. We got to keep the motion happening. And so the ride cymbal provides that motion.
Now, Buddy Rich and Max Roach influenced you in the very beginning to pick up the drumsticks. Mm-hmm. Why did they do that?
Well, you know, I saw Buddy on the television on the Lucy show when I was a kid, and it was just fascinating to see somebody that could do what he did, you know, and it was seemed fun, and he was funny, and he, you know, on the Lucy show, he did his routine, and I love the sound, you know, it really captured me, it sounded in me somehow, and it was my entry point to music. I mean, I was listening to a lot of music, but point of entry of discovering an instrument that I thought really would work for me, and then when I heard this record of there's a record called Rich versus Roach, where they had their respective bands playing, and they played together. When I heard that record at my friend's house when we were kids in summer, and I heard this one cut, it totally changed. I mean, that's when my ears just went, wow. And that's what, it's kind of like Jimmy Heath saying today, wow, when he saw the blue on the saxophone, I want to do that. When I heard that, I said, oh, that's what I want to do. You know? So when I heard Max, it fascinated me, you know, really fascinated me with how, because he played over the walking bass when he was solo. So the bass was, you know, walking, and he soloed over it, and he sounded like more like a horn player or a singer or something to me. You know, he would really, the rhythms really had, they had these melodies, and they had their intervals, and they had depth of sound. Some of the sound was thick, some of the sound was thin, you know. So it really went in my ears, and I was like, wow. It went everywhere. So, wow, I was really experiencing something that I hadn't experienced before when I heard that. So then I really became, one of my sons' names is Max. So, I mean, you know, it's been a big influence.
In a music masterclass, what's the most important lesson that you try to convey to your students?
A few things. Be a welcomer to the music. You know, allow people to go places. That, to me, that's one of the keys, especially as a drummer. I mean, Baby Dodds, a great drummer, said, "Band with a drummer with no spirit ain't no band." So you have to really have a spirit and a presence, you know. But as overall is you have to be. First of all, we should show gratitude that we get to do this and have fun, as much fun as possible. But it's about to create unity in a band. It's not about just what you play; it's how you receive the sound from everybody else. So I think offering a sound and receiving a sound, that kind of cycle between musicians, is really what this is all about. Somebody, you know, you're offering your sound, they're offering, and you're welcoming somebody else's sound. So that whole thing, that kind of, you know, reciprocal kind of fashion, is really what makes this any music event very special. And when sometimes you get people and they're only about themselves, you know, and so you feel that in the music. You don't feel them. They're playing what they're offering. They're giving and taking. They're not offering and receiving. There's a difference. So to me, you want to offer your sound and you want to receive the sound. And that's what kind of, again, same way with an audience. We offer a sound to an audience and they receive it, and they offer their love back and we receive it. I mean, it's all about this. It's like flows. So I always try to have my students realize, and myself realize too, that everybody's sound is in your sound and your sound is in everybody else's sound. It's not separate things going on at once. When you're playing, if you're playing with somebody else, their sound is part of your sound. So you have to welcome it. Be very mindful of it. But presence and mindfulness, I think, is one of the things that really, you know, really be present in the performance, and then things really open up.
I think you mentioned that you take yoga classes or something like
that. Yeah, I take yoga classes.
I was wondering, is there any spiritual influence behind your work?
I think spirituality comes from a lot of different places, and I get it from a lot of different places. You know, I get it. I'm an elder at my church. You know, a Presbyterian church. But I get things from everybody. You know, I mean, I think to me my greatest relationship spiritually that I can possibly have is playing music.
Okay,
that's the highest form of meditation that I can do. It's the highest form of praise that I can do is do that. So that's how I sort of think about it. I mean, the bandstand to me is that place where, you know, I don't think there's anything. I mean, even I've had yoga teachers say that to me. It's like, wow, what you guys are doing is the highest form of meditation possible, where you're creating sound together and you're doing everything, like being selfless. And a lot of times guys aren't, so, you know, or people aren't. So you'll detect that. Luckily, I'm very fortunate to surround myself with a lot of great people that I get that feeling from all the time.
I was wondering, could you talk with me for a few minutes about your work with Dina DeRose? You've been working with her for quite a few years.
Yeah, it's going on, I think it's close to 20 years, I think, I've been working with Dina. I have some stuff with her coming up I'm really looking forward to. Dina is a very special player, great interpreter of a song, amazing musician, amazing human being. One of the things I really love about her is that is unlike a lot of folks, she really appreciates and respects the sanctity of the moment. So she's not a big rehearser, and she's not a big, it's got to go this way. She's always really dives in. So sometimes, you know, when you take those kind of chances, which is what I try to do with everything I do, you know, you're opening yourself up for failure a lot more, which is one of the things you have to respect and one of the things you have to be ready to do. People that have the stuff set so much that there's no room for the unexpected, there's no wiggle room in there, then, okay, the performance may come off as like, oh yeah, that was great, but you don't get that extra special, wow, we were the part of something. The only way you can really get that feeling that you're really part of something is when you totally walk that line and aren't afraid of failing. And so she's really great at that. I mean, a lot of vocalists a lot of times can really be very, very particular and, you know, this has got to be this way, it's got to be this way, and she's not at all. So I think that's one of the reasons that I think she's a very, very special performer. And I think people sense that from her because it's so in the moment and she's strong, you know, very strong. I'm very lucky in to be around a lot of a world of a wide spectrum of musicians of all ages, and I play with a lot of great women musicians, you know, Dina, Myra Melford, Jane Ira Bloom. I mean, Jane Ira Bloom I consider one of the greatest, you know, composers that we have. Joanne Brackeen, you know, Anat Cohen, there's all these great musicians. So, you know, there's a different kind of energy often that I get from playing with women that I don't get from men. And sometimes I think men could welcome some feminine energy into their play a little bit more. And I appreciate that. And again, different age. I mean, I've been very blessed to sort of still have an apprentice way of learning this music from playing with Dewey for, you know, 12 years and playing with Charlie Hayden and playing with Andrew Hill and playing with Lee Konitz for many years. So I've learned from those guys and I've learned from my peers a lot. And now I'm playing with a lot of younger folks, and it's great to get to play with them. You know, really fortunate to do that too. So now I see it kind of coming full circle. It's very fun.
And you worked with Marshall Allen at the Sun Ra Orchestra. Could you tell me about that?
Yeah, I do a lot of educational work and as a teaching artist and stuff. And I've hosted two Jazz for Young People concerts for Jazz at Lincoln Center. I did one last year, recently, with called What is Improvisation? And that was with my band Arts and Crafts. My daughter was in it. She's a young actress, and so she played a contestant on a cooking show. And it was kind of using the band as her, how she cooked dishes. And it was really fun. And Joe Gafossi, who is Jane Ira Bloom's husband, is a great character actor. He's been in a lot of movies, and he's a great director. He directed it and was in it, and he had three of his graduate students from the New School band. So we had a great time doing that. But the first one I did was called What is Free Jazz? And I thought the best person that I could get to help me out with that one was calling Mr. Allen. So we did, and he was incredible. Marshall Allen is, first of all, is an amazing saxophonist. He's an amazing human being. He's 86 or 87 years old. He's about Jimmy's age. And Mr. Heath, and he has a really special way of playing the saxophone, and he was an incredibly giving teacher. You know, he was great with the students, and he was great with interacting with everybody, and he's an amazing human being. One of my goals is to try to record some duos with him before the end of the year. I really want to record with him because he's amazing. And he has all the heroes that we all have. Johnny Hodges and, you know, all these great people that were in big bands and stuff like that. And Marshall has a very unique way of playing and a very unique personality. So it's great. It was really a pleasure to be around him.
I don't think there's really been yet a full appreciation of the Sun Ra Orchestra in terms of the creative impact on jazz in the last half century. Because
the
music is so profound,
yeah,
given the fact that the leader claimed to be an extraterrestrial,
yeah,
and made music that only an extraterrestrial could conceive of,
yeah,
in many ways. So it's just, the music really deserves a fresh hearing and reading by new ears and musicians.
Oh, definitely. I've been trying to, you know, I think the Jazz Lincoln Center Orchestra should definitely do some Sun Ra music with Marshall, you know, and I was kind of hoping that might, you know, occur after we had him there, and I think it's close. But yeah, man, the amount of music and the longevity of the band and the whole spectacle of it, you know, I mean, it's so great to get to see it, and the musicianship was incredible, you know, I mean, Pat Patrick, John Gilmore, you know, Sun Ra, I mean, all these great musicians there, Victor, you know, all these great musicians that were in that band. And it was unique, obviously. Having seen the band and everything, it was always incredible to witness. It was great.
On the tune Bubbles from An Attitude for Gratitude, were you reading the lyrics for that? Or the,
yeah, that's me. Yeah,
okay. Very, very good tune. Very meaningful.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
And I really also enjoyed your presentation of Teen Town from that same recording.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
Jaco Pastorius, obviously one of the most important bassists to ever walk the planet. You know, very sad demise.
Yeah,
and all that.
Very sad.
I also wanted to ask about your Christmas recording, Christmas Trio. How can you reinvigorate classic holiday season favorites with a new direction and with a new pulse? That must be quite a challenge.
You know what? It wasn't as big a challenge as you think. I mean, I think one of the great hallmarks of a jazz musician there's subjects, you know, like American Songbook tunes or standards or subjects. And I think one of the nice things is the great thing about people hearing how someone interprets something is part of jazz. So when somebody hears somebody do a tune that they know, and oh wow, they're putting their own spin on it. You know, I think it's a cool way to do it. It's a sort of a barometer of oh wow. So when we were putting this together, it really wasn't that difficult to come up with them. And we have more actually, and we're actually doing two nights in December at the Jazz Standard, and Bill Frisell is going to be our guest.
Wow.
So we're going to have choir and everything. So, but it, again, it was really fun to just pick out the tunes and figure out ways to try to do them, you know. It's fun. It's really, really fun. It's been really amazing experience to do that. Very popular. Like the record's done really well and everything. It's crazy. So we had a good time doing it.
Good.
Yeah.
I wanted to congratulate you on the 15th anniversary of the Matt Wilson Quartet. I've followed your music for the last decade plus.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
That
was a great night, the night that we did that about a month, 2 months ago. We did it at Smalls in New York, and it was a big fun. Arts and Crafts played an incredible concert the night before in Cleveland, and then we did that the next night in New York with the quartet, and Joel Fromm and Andrew D'Angelo played, and we played a lot of tunes with four horns, Jeff Letter and Kirk Konefke and Chris Lightcap and I. We did different eras of the quartet and everything like that. And we've been having fun. That'll be my next record, is with the quartet, with Kirk and Jeff and Lighty and probably with strings. We've been doing some concerts with strings, so string quartet. So I think that will probably be the next. We did the Newport Festival. We've done Litchfield. We've done a couple nights in New York. We have a gig next year in D.C. So that'll be the next record, I think, that I'm going to do.
So in for the title of the last recording, An Attitude for Gratitude, is that something that you imbibe or have as a personal motto for life or something? Or
yeah, a little bit. You know, we've gone through a rough couple of years because my wife was diagnosed with leukemia in the fall of 2010. So, and she had a bone marrow transplant in March of 2011. So, and she's doing pretty very well. And we're just... It was kind of like I described it last week. I did an interview for All Things Considered. I sort of described it as a sonic thank you note of sorts. And minister at our little hip Presbyterian church I go to, his name is Adrian Pratt. He's a great guy, British cat. And he brought that up one day in a sermon, talked about an attitude for gratitude, and I thought it was a really nice statement, you know. And we have to, you know, playing music is a great form, I mean, of showing gratitude. I mean, it's really a gift to get to be able to do this. And I don't take it for granted whatsoever. I don't think I'll ever tire of it. I don't think I'll ever get bored with it. I don't think I'll ever not get excited about getting on a plane and going somewhere and playing for folks. I think I'll never, I don't think I'll ever tire of that, the excitement. I'm very excited about tonight, something totally brand new. And that's the great thing about this music, is that it's always welcoming something new, because we're not trying to do anything again, because we can't. So tonight will be a whole new experience. It'll be great because we have no expectations. There's no expectations. There's no disappointments. So, you know, it'll be. Somebody asked us today, somebody maybe said, what's our intent of doing this, or what do we want to see make happen with it? I don't know. I think make is a rough word. I don't really like the term making music that much, because it sounds like a job or it sounds like something you've got to do. I don't think we make music. I think we allow it, and I think the music is already there. And if we just get out of the way, we're allowing it to happen. And that to me is to my favorite nights, which are, you know, Mel Lewis said this to once, and I sort of lived by this too. Mel Lewis told me once, he goes, you know, I don't have a bad night. I just have better nights than others. Mm-hmm. So, you know, every night that I get to play is great. And I don't, again, I don't take any of the experiences for granted. So that's why I really love, and I love too, in my world, I'm very, very appreciative of the spectrum of musicians. And I'm not really super categorized, you know, I'm not. So I, you know, enjoy doing stuff with Marshall Allen. I enjoy doing stuff with, you know, last year alone, I got to play, man, I played with Candido, you know, it was 90-something, 90-year-old Master Conguero. I premiered a bunch of new groups. I got to play with, you know, with Junior Mance. I got to play with John Zorn and Thurston Moore from Sonic Youth. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, those are wide spectrum, you know. Went in, you know, all these different things. And I respect, I don't put one above the other. There's not one that I appreciate more. There's not one that I think is more important in my life or less important. All of the experiences are cool. So I don't think, I got to go play tunes. I'm not so into that. Oh, I get to go play three. Not one of them is really any better for me or favorite. You know? So whether it's playing with John Scofield or playing with whomever, you know, I mean, it's all great experiences.
Yeah, and the thing that concerns me when somebody says you have to make music, that isn't how it happens on stage, or it doesn't happen, at least for me, in an air studio, because sometimes I get this really strong impression that I should play that tune from that CD, and then I put it in there, and I haven't even heard it,
yeah.
And then it just flows together more beautifully than I can possibly imagine.
Exactly.
It just happens.
Exactly.
And that happens more often than not. I mean, it just... If I let myself go to the flow, then the show evolves of its own accord without me actually really intending where it's going to go.
Exactly. I think, but it's risky. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not to say that we can't be organized. I think presentation is very important in music. I'm a big advocate of that. How, you know, you want to have different moods and you want to have different spectrums of sound and everything like that. But I mean, we can't control this music. We don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
I mean, you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So, and the least. And also, sometimes ignorance is great. I mean, I always like to brag that I'm an idiot, and I like that part of it. That I don't want to know too much. I don't want to be too informed, because then your brain gets in the way. But it's also nice to be thought. I mean, I just read a great quote by T.S. Eliot. He said, "The sign of a good poet is someone who knows when to be conscious and when to be unconscious." And I think that goes to musicians too, where musicians have to have conscious to them. They have to, okay, this is, you know, there's nothing more frustrating sometimes than you rehearse or you try something and people don't remember it, or people, so there's the conscious part, and then there's the unconscious part. So when people have both of that together, when they can think and not think and know when to do that, that's great. And I read a great quote yesterday too that I really appreciate, that Duchamp said, "I'm not interested in art, I'm interested in artists." And I think that's what I'm not interested in music, I'm interested in musicians. So to me, who I surround myself with and who I learn from and who I'm around and get inspired from and get lifted from is really the concern. So when people ask me about all these different settings or different, even my own different bands, what's the difference between arts and crafts and a quartet? It's the people. That's it. The music is basically the same.
Sure.
It's just different people doing it. And I'm very fortunate that these people are my great friends. I always say when I introduce bands, my great, great friends that I also have the opportunity to play music with. So, you know, they're people first. It's a human experience more than it is a sound experience. So how you treat people, that's getting back to the masterclass thing too, is, well, it's a human experience. So how you are as a person really affects, really, really affects the music. So I'm, you know, I try to be as positive all the time, even not only on the bandstand, but traveling, you know, through everything, try to be, keep the lift up and keep people laughing and stuff all the time. The more comfortable you allow people to be, then the more you're going to, that kind of stuff is going to happen. I don't think intimidation really gets a lot of results. It can from certain people. Some people have that way of doing that. I could never be that way. So, but I've been around people that, again, I've been very fortunate to learn from great people and continue to learn. I mean, it's a constant learning experience. And, you know, all the time. You know, I don't have a master's degree here. I have a bachelor's degree in music, but I didn't go on to more school. I went to the University of Redmond. You know, I learned a lot from being around Dewey, and about sound, everything. So I'm fortunate that I'm very feel very grateful too to try to do sort of the folk way of teaching this music, which is through gathering experiences and gathering stories and retelling these stories to people. You know, like, wow, my experiences with Paul Motion, or my experiences, you know, playing with Andrew Hill, or my experience playing with, you know, Dewey for that many years, or Lee, or all the different settings, you know, and Dina and Ted Nash, and all the list goes on and on. what you learn and what you can convey to people by one little thought that they might say to you. So it's great in that regard. So yeah, it's always, you never know, learn something today, you know, just listening to Mr. Heath, you know, or listening to Chris. And I love those kinds of settings. It was actually my suggestion to do those things. I think the more that people have a chance to sit and listen to someone's stories rather than just hear them play, they create more of a relationship with them. Oh, they know Jimmy was this and that. They know that his son wrote this, closer I get to you. It creates a human thing. Wow. You know, people. And I think that's what will help this music more than, you know, that's one of the greatest form of marketing is for people to get to know the musician, not put them on a stage and get them out of town. Get them a chance to be part of the community. You know, they're human beings. They walk and talk and eat and watch TV like all of us. So we get a chance to hang with them and talk. Like when I came down the other day, you know, I forego breakfast to sit and talk with my friend Tootie Heath for a half an hour, you know. And we have a lot of good tales together with Tootie now. And so I love that. That's why I love the road. And I love these sentences because I get a chance to spend a lot of time with musicians because we can talk all the time. So Joe Lovano, man, I did a 5-week tour with Joe Lovano, John Scofield, man, and with Matt Pemmon. We were in Asia all over the place for 5 weeks, you know, so a lot of airplane time. So I sit next to Joe and we talk, man, for hours, you know, about scenes in Cleveland and growing up and his, you know, talk about music, talk about everything, you know, and I learned so much from him. You know, he's another great mentor of mine. I consider a very valuable person in my life is Joe Lovano and John Scofield both. I mean, they're both such huge fans of music, and they're such great human beings that I learned a lot. We did a 5-week tour and there wasn't one second of tension the whole tour. Like 5 weeks, you know? No problems. No, everybody's cool. Everybody did their job on the bandstand. We had a lot of fun. Everybody did their job out and about. Respected each other, respected the people around them, respect people at hotels, respect people at restaurants, the whole thing. So that's the only time I maybe pull somebody's coattail a little bit and say, hey, you know, don't be that way to somebody. They're working hard, they're trying to do their job. And this is a community music, so you know, people like yourself on the radio and people that write and people that present and people that are fans and people that do this and that. We're all part of this family. Something somewhere along the line, this music sounded in this and we liked it. So we have to respect everybody that's part of the family, not just the musicians. Without people hearing it, there ain't no music. So that's why it's very, very important for us to harbor relationships all the way around, especially the community feeling of it. So I try to do that as much as possible. That's why I do all this outreach stuff. And that's why I made this suggestion about doing this about Paul. Otherwise, people would just, oh, yeah, music of Paul Motion. What is that? You know, so, but now they heard stories about Paul and, you know, and Jimmy's, you know, stories, too. I mean, I think having the chance to ask Jimmy Heath a question is really valuable. So, if we can see this in more at festivals. Detroit did it, and that's where I got the idea when I was the artist in residence at the Litchfield Jazz Festival. So when I was the artist in residence for the last two, but I did it for 2 years. The first year I interviewed Dave Brubeck and Mario Pavone. And last year I interviewed Jimmy and Joe Lovano together and Roy Haynes and Vijay Iyer. And just a chance to visit like that and hear, I mean, that stuff, you don't learn that in school. You know, so you learn that from the source, you know? So I tell cats, what are you doing? Look at that. Go to the stores. If you have a chance to sit down. If I was a young saxophone player in town this weekend, I'd say, wow, Mr. Heath, can I have 10 minutes of your time? You know, I wouldn't be afraid to. Or Tootie Heath. If I was a young drummer, they all should be going to, you know, ask Tootie Heath a question about his playing with Herbie or his playing at this, you know, where are they? You know, there's a great story of a few years ago, I was artist in residence with Ted Nash at the Tri-C Jazz Festival in Cleveland. We stayed up, a handful of us, Ted, Claire Daly, great baritone saxophonist, somebody else. We stayed up till 4 o'clock in a hotel lobby like that, right over there, wow, listening to Jimmy tell stories. You know, we were doing it at 8:30 the next morning. We were back at breakfast, listening to him tell more stories. You know, so we were soaking them all in. Where were the students listening to stories? They didn't even go to the concert, but we're sitting there making sure that we get this anthropology directed, because this is where you get it. So we get a chance to hear the stories from these guys. It's great. Like Roy Haynes is my neighbor, so I run into him at the grocery store. So it's great to sit and talk to him about them. Great. That's wonderful. I love that part of it, though. I like that word more than history. I like the word anthropology because it's living. So we have a chance to hear from the source, someone who was there around, you know, Dizzy and John Coltrane. And the list goes on and on of who Jimmy was among those giants. Man, you have to be a fool not to be there to hear this kind of stuff. I mean, you really do. You know, we can't not. I just read a great quote too yesterday. John Cleese, the great comedian, said, "Nobody gets a great idea from a laptop." Nobody, you know, we can learn from those things. They're a tool, but so you got to still. It's a human experience. You get a chance to go, and I learned this early on. You know, about going up. Just I'd go up and talk to these guys. You know, start talking to them. And you never know, like one little bit of wisdom that they may give you or advice. Or, and it's funny how these people, I saw Dewey Redman play in the winter of 1988, and I heard that and I said, man, I want to play with him. And I did. I got to. I saw Charlie Hayden. I said, wow, I want to play with him. And I've gotten to a lot. You know what I mean? Buster Williams is a great friend of mine. And one of my favorite people to play with in the whole wide world is Buster. And I couldn't believe I played along with records of him on records so much that the first day I played, I couldn't believe. Here's my ride cymbal, hand playing the ride cymbal. And there's Buster Williams with Denny's Island. You know, we had this long-standing trio with Denny's Island. Mm-hmm. And Buster and I, for like 11 years we've been doing it. Mm-hmm. And there's Buster Williams. I'm on the bandstand with Buster Williams. Mm-hmm. You know, I hired Buster for some gigs. You know, I mean, here I am with Buster Williams, you know? Here I am traveling with Buster Williams. Here I am having dinner with Buster Williams. Here I am talking on the telephone with Buster Williams. Here's Buster Williams calling and wishing my wife all the love and everything and stuff through her illness. I mean, these people are great people, you know? So, man, you know, Randy Breck. I mean, all these people, you know, they're great human beings. So it's a dream for me to be. I used to see that when I was younger and go to festivals. I used to love to be a young person and see two musicians that hadn't seen each other for a while see each other. I always thought it was great. Hey, how you doing? How's the family? How's the kids? You know, and then I would get introduced in that circle a little bit. Mm-hmm. And now I'm at these places. I am that person. You know, I am those people that go, hey man, how you? Sure. I know all these musicians, and I meet younger ones and new ones all the time. You know, but I love that part of it. That was part of it for me. It wasn't just this or they're playing. It was like, wow, there is some sort of community there. So when I get a chance to see the Heats, or you know, I went out last night with Jeb and David, you know, from their band, his band, or hang out with Roy Haynes, you know, I mean, Roy Haynes, you know, I mean, I'm at the grocery store with Roy Haynes. I mean, it's amazing. And when he leaves, I always say to the checkout person, you know, that's the world's greatest living drummer right there. And they always say, oh yeah, we know he's something. He is. So I think that part of it is essential, and the only way you can't learn it from just this recordings. And I mean, recordings, we have to hear this music, but we have to experience it. We have to experience it, see how the people are side stage. So YouTube and everything are great. It's great tools, but it doesn't replace this right here. You know, people getting together, talking. I mean, visiting has become a lost art. You know, in a certain way. I mean, visiting. You know, everybody's got everything. We can get a hold of everybody, and we can do all this stuff, but we don't do it. We, you know, send a text message or something like that. Sit down here, have a meal, have a drink, whatever. Talk. You know. So I'm going a little more analog. I've made a decision. You know, I read this great book yesterday called "Steal Your Own Artist." It's by this guy from Austin, Texas. It was a really inspirational. I bought it in the airport yesterday, O'Hare. And it's incredible. I read it, man. It's totally become a new thing. And he has an analog desk and a digital desk. Mm. I love that. Mm. He has an analog desk. He went and he said, man, get an analog desk. Go spend $10 and buy paper clips and use scissors and glue and scrapbooks and start to put things together analog. And he says, then use the digital to other things. But don't sit there and try to create with, you know. He said, we've lost so much of using our hands to do anything, feeling something, touching it, that we got to get in there and touch it. You know, music is that. That's, thank God we have music, because people are still touching their instruments. But most people don't know that a lot of music is done from somebody with their fingers on a screen, you know, on a keyboard, you know, with a screen, you know. So, but human music is something else. So I think that kind of world is essential. So fellowship like that. I mean, I appreciate it. I appreciate the time of just hanging out, you know, wandering. Like, I love that what Chris said so eloquently today about Paul, that sense of wonder. You know, you can never lose. Look at Jimmy Heath, that sense of wonder. He's still checking out things, you know, learning. You know, you look at the sparkle in their eyes. Lee Cohen is the same way. I just played with Lee a few weeks ago at the Discover Jazz Festival. He's pretty close to Jimmy's age, too. He's 80 something. That sense of wonder. Roy Haynes, 87. You know, that sense of wonder and wonder is both there. Both of them are there. Not afraid to go out and check things out. I was at the Lionel Hampton Festival in February, and I went to see Tower of Power with Roy. Man, he loved it. We were sitting there, man, this band is so great. We were just so marveled by it. So it was really great to sit there and experience that with this master of American music. So, yeah, it's all, it's all there, you know? It's all there for us. It's all there. And the internet has helped because it connects people. It created a network, and it's really what it is, right? So now it's easier for you to get to learn about these recordings, and it's more immediate, which is great. In the old days, you had people heard about a record if they could find it. It was a miracle. Now, man, you can find it on your phone. Yeah. So I say to students, you know, don't take this kind of stuff for granted. Like, that you could do. I had to look at pictures of Roy Haynes or Paul Motion. I didn't get to see them play. I had to go. I had to make the effort to go see them. But I didn't. You know, now you can study them. I can get a recording of Paul up right now and watch him play. So I had to look at pictures and forget. So there's a little bit. Technology is great, but it's not. You still have to have the beautiful thing.